Hello and welcome to the Logistics Tribe. I'm your host, Boris Felgendreher, and today's episode is dedicated to the topic of IoT-enabled real-time visibility and traceability in the supply chain. I've invited two guests onto the program today, who are the co-CEOs of HiveZox, a startup out of Switzerland that allows seamless, autonomous, low-cost, real-time tracking of objects in your supply chain down to the item level. Something that is really attractive for temperature-controlled pharma supply chains, but the company has ambitions to make this technology ubiquitous and used across a wide variety of industries and use cases. Let's find out how. Here are Miroslav Skorepa and Charles Bourbonnet of HiveZox. Charles, Miro, welcome to the Logistics Tribe podcast. Thanks for being on the program, guys.
Thank you for having us, Boris.
Fantastic, fantastic. Where are you guys as we speak? You're in Switzerland. How are things in Switzerland these days?
Things are good. It's nice weather, finally, because the month of May was terrible this year. I don't know how it was for you guys,
year.
But it was rain and cold. But now it's a sunny sky, sunny blue skies, and the restaurants are open, the terraces are open, so it's a nice, looks like things are getting back to normal and the summer can start.
Yeah, but don't worry, it starts raining tomorrow again.
Yeah, it's a thunderstorm is about to come in here as we speak. So if you hear some thunder and lightning in the background, that's from my background. Miro, how have you been, man? It's been a while since we talked. We've known each other for a number of years, going back all the way to the time when you ran logistics over at Bacardi. How have things been since then?
It has been great. But we have not seen each other for like 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while. So you guys are now at HiveZox, right? So it's a joint venture, and you're both are co-CEOs of the company, right? Can you give a little bit of a background or a history of how this company came about?
So since I left Bacardi, I've been looking around what to do, and the technology has been always in a part of my heart.
Yeah.
So I found a startup in Prague, which has been doing tracking devices. And I've invested in them, and we start looking for a reasonable partner who could complement with the devices we don't have in portfolio and a platform we could join to accelerate our growth. And I've been looking around and find a neighbor in Switzerland. So since then, we've been having a joint venture.
Charles, what about you? What's your background? You're not from the logistics or supply chain space. I saw you more on the financial side, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly, exactly. So I come from a financial background. I worked in investment banking and then working with ultra high net worth families and individuals. And it was during that time that I was doing a lot of direct investments in startups and getting involved in the space purely from an investment side. And then I met my co-founder, and he had this idea. He came from a logistics background, and he had this idea of tracking, monitoring item level, down to the item level. So really down to the ID. And I really liked it. I really saw the possibilities in it. I looked at the industry. I saw that there, at the time anyways, there wasn't really anything out there doing that, at least not down to this level. Everything was really at the high end, or you know, just following trucks and trying to get checkpoint data. And so I really liked the real-time visibility aspect. And so we started to work together. And during that time, helping to structure the company and figure out the branding and everything, and finding investment, just seemed to be a good fit. And I decided to make the jump from investor to founder and manager.
Mm-hmm.
And we went from there. And then a year and a half later, we met Miro, who had the same philosophy and vision as us to want to be able to track and monitor every item, every shipment across the globe, but keeping it at a really cost-efficient level, because you know, margins and logistics are really tight, and everyone can benefit from this, from you know, the manufacturers to the carriers to shippers to the customers. So, and I think it's just becoming more and more important. So you need to offer that, but at a very cost-efficient level.
Yeah, Miroslav, let me take a guess that your initial interest in this sort of topic originated when you were at Bacardi and maybe had some frustrations around visibility and traceability around the extended supply chain. I mean, I know back in the days that there was one of your key parts and key roles, right, to run that program that allows you at least container level visibility across the supply chain. But here it's several layers down and more granular. Maybe take us back, Miroslav, to the time when you really worked for a fast moving consumer goods company, a beverage company. What sort of visibility and traceability is possible in that sort of scenario? And where are the real gaps? What was the real frustration back in the days? What did you see and what didn't you see? And what did you want to see?
Well, spot on, Boris. We had the challenge of having the real-time visibility at the Bacardi time, but even before that. And partially we solved that with the GT Nexus, so that where we both met.
Yeah.
And you know that the annual winner of the data accuracy, right? It was the key highlight of the evenings every year. And then it was always about the data accuracy. And we sort of forgot about the data timeliness. So most of the data were accurate, but not on time. And that's where we suffered always when the customer calls us the information which has not been on the platform yet. So we were looking at a different kind of technology to complement the online visibility platforms.
And when you just take us back, when you say even before that, what was your history before Bacardi? I mean, you're a long-time logistics guy, right? What did you do before Bacardi?
I was at the Philips, and with Philips, we were one of the first GT Nexus customer.
Yeah, so your interest in visibility and traceability goes way back. So you've been trying to solve this problem for the better part of the last 15 years, maybe.
Well, not exactly, but I'm in logistics much longer than that. But GT Nexus first started as a booking platform, not necessarily visibility. That was the add-on later on. But still, even in a supply chain with the software platform, you have those gaps when the containers are left alone at a port, railhead, traveling on a pre-carriage, on-carriage. You don't have those visibilities. Or when the cargo is out of the truck.
And just in all fairness, this is not we're not picking on a particular technology. I mean, this is a problem or an issue that goes across any platform you use, whether you use E2Open or Intra or GT Nexus or any platform that tries to provide you visibility, or the more the newer generations of platform as well. This is inherent in what you just described, that tracking stuff on an item level is oftentimes impossible because you're relying on manual data entry of people actually doing the actual updating of the data and so forth. A lot of stuff simply is not connected, right? It's not the vision of the universally connected supply chain with every item in the supply chain being visible, being IoT trackable and so forth. That's sort of a vision that still hasn't materialized to this day, correct?
Exactly. I mean, that's the vision that we want to get to. We really want to be able to offer that. And that is our vision. And we have a pipeline of development to get there and a plan to be able to accomplish that. However, you're saying exactly, that's exactly the problem with the platforms today. I mean, the biggest and best platforms out there, what they're doing is they're giving you the best visibility possible by connecting through, you know, EDIs and ELDs to the trucks and getting metadata and connecting to the boats and the planes and everything. And that's great. I mean, as long as your shipment is actually on that truck. I mean, I've heard that more than once where they've been getting visibility, they're getting ETAs, and then, oh, my shipment wasn't actually on that cargo truck or that boat or things like that. So sometimes you're even getting the wrong data and you're getting the wrong ETAs. And it's still great. I mean, it's improved the industry significantly. Don't get me wrong. And it's much better than it was. But until you're able to, you know, get down to the item level, so to the pallet, to the box, and even down to the product within the box and the individual blister, if you wanted it, depending on the industry, that's when the real value comes out of visibility. And then if you can add on the fact that you're monitoring the conditions of that, then you're getting the full value. And that's where everyone needs to get to, because until you have that, as Miro just said before, if your shipment or your products is not on a truck or a boat or a plane, if it's in a yard or a warehouse, you don't know where it is, or you don't know what condition it's in. You know, if it's sitting on the tarmac, okay, how long has it been sitting on the tarmac? What's the, you know, how hot is the sun there? Or it's in the port, but you know, where is it in the port? Did they put it on the boat? Is it gone? Is it on the right boat? And those are all manual inputs that need to be added. And as we know, most people forget or don't do it in time. So you're getting delayed information, and you want to make that as autonomous and seamless as possible.
Yeah, and but it's also not the case that there's nothing out there that doesn't try to solve this problem, right? So there's stuff for cold chain monitoring. It's been out there for a long time. Take me back to a time when you first started the company and you did a sort of a scan or a take an inventory of what's already out there. What did you find, and what sort of gaps did you analyze? Because it's not like you were the first ones to come up with an idea or identify this problem. There's plenty of solutions out there. What did you find that's sort of missing that the other systems didn't provide?
Well, specifically in cold chain, what we found was that most of the legacy technology that's still out there right now, but most of it was just passive data loggers, USB sticks that had to be, you know, put onto the shipment, wait for the shipment to be delivered, and at delivery, get those USB sticks off the shipment, out of the boxes, that are plug them into the computer, get the report, send the report off to a quality assurance person for possibly to get the approval to then release the shipment. And all of that was very time consuming and very costly. Devices that were starting to offer real time data were very expensive, were bulky. They weren't, there was big problems with reverse logistics. It was also very expensive. So most people were doing a single time use, so non-circular technology or solutions. And it was just very, very expensive. So unless the product was of seriously high value, pharmaceutical, life dependent, then you weren't getting that. And what we wanted to do, and we spoke to people in the industry, is offer a device that was small enough to go everywhere, that was cheap enough to be used on almost everything, and as best as possible could get you real-time data. And that's what we set to achieve, and that's what we have achieved.
Yeah, and take me back to the first prototype, the first iteration of the product, so to speak. How did that look like, and how has it evolved over time?
So that's a funny story. So we spoke to somebody in the industry, and we said, you know, what would get you going to put this on everything? He said, well, if you can give me a device that's the size of 2 euros and costs 2 euros, then I'm going to put it on everything. So that was our aim. Now, obviously, components and technology, even today, as prices have come down significantly, but there, you know, as soon as you start putting a good temperature sensor in there and your battery and everything, you're not going to be down to 2 euros. However, we did make it the size of 2 euros, so we had it as a coin-shaped device, and it was an active data logger, and it was only 3 euros thick, so you had the battery and the electronics all on top. It was working because that was only with Bluetooth. So it was working as in a parent-child relationship with a mobile gateway. So you were able to fill your container with beacons on every box and have one gateway to send that data in real time. That was the first iteration. Then we evolved from there to create a flatter, more sleek design, a device that can go simply into an envelope, into the side of a packaging, into the top of a box, so without creating any kind of bulk. And we added on a lot of features. So we originally started out with just temperature, humidity, and light, and the sensors only being able to read all together at once. So you had to have the measurement all at the same time. And we evolved to being able to offer temperature, humidity, light, shock, tilt, acceleration, pressure, internal and external temperature with an external temperature probe, and having everything being able to be monitored independently. So taking your measurements at different times. We do everything on the device. So now we have basically edge computing. So the device is determining when there's an event that needs to inform the client. When there's an excursion on the temperature, for example, or there's been a shock, or the one box is left behind and the rest of the shipment is going forward, and also we've evolved to going from just purely GSM communications to what's called mobile IoT networks or low power wide area networks. So everything that is Cat M1, narrowband IoT, and 2G for the countries that aren't offering that. And we're already preparing for the 5G evolution.
Yeah, and both of you guys are not engineers. So how did you come up with this original engineering drawing and design?
Well, Miro's like, got a bit more of a technical background than I do. I just had a lot of interest.
But Charles already doesn't sound like a banker anymore. No, I'm not engineer, but my education is programming. So that's very close. And I'm there from the logistics point of view, not designing the devices. We have a team to do that. And I'm saying what the device needs to do. So my first prototype was like, we need to have a device which lasts 1,200 cycles, and the first one was 200. So we need to redesign that, and they were so clever to make it 4,500 cycles. Like, no, it's too much. We need to redesign that. We need less. So it is interesting. So I'm there from a logistics perspective, or the functionality, what would be the customer view in that.
And who were, describe to me the first customer that decided to try this out with you. Like, how did you recruit them and how did that whole situation or the relationship unfold?
So we have, obviously in my past, a lot of contacts. So we've recruited from the past, and one of the consumer electronics has the initial request to track the devices from the security and location point of view, because they didn't know where the cargo is traveling, through which hubs and how long, and the customer were not exactly happy about the arrival accuracy. The insurance was not happy for paying so much of claims. So it was obvious that we will try, and it has been quite successful.
I have a funny story, if I may, on first
please.
Client experience, because it really showed the differences between internally within a company. So I won't, obviously I'm not going to name any names, but so we had an invitation from a very large cargo carrier, rail cargo, and we found out actually, they called for, they wanted to do a POC, they wanted to test out the solution, and we had the sales side, the client-facing side, and the executives, they wanted to give the full visibility to their clients. They wanted to, you know, be able to have the visibility on the cargo from before it's getting onto the trains, inside the trains, then when it's getting off the train and being delivered, to really give that full view to a client and be able to sell that as an added service. And then we even found out that during the POC, they were already using another solution to actually track their cars, their rail cars, not all of them, but some of them. And as the POC developed, and we were going to give them that internal view of the cargo within their wagons. As that started to develop and we had to deal with the operations side of the business, well, the POC became less and less, well, interesting for us, because they wanted, the operations side wanted or pushed to have less and less information given to them. And so that showed, and so the client-facing side was saying, no, we want all the information, we want everything. And the operations side said, just wanted the basic information, like really, really the basic, you know, where's my wagon, what direction my wagon is going in. And even that ended up showing them that they didn't have control over their own rail wagons, which was astounding for me, how train companies can lose wagons since they're on rails and they can't go anywhere else. But yeah. We were supposed to be on a closed circuit, and the wagons ended up going into all other parts of the country. And a POC that was supposed to last 4 weeks ended up lasting 5 months, because it took them that long to get the wagons back to be able to get us our equipment back.
So. Yeah, but then how did it evolve from there? So how did the, where are you today? I mean, do you have a firm customer base? How widely is this used as we speak? This is June 2021.
Yeah, so this is June 2021. We are officially doing commercial launch. We were supposed to be doing it last year. COVID hit. Luckily, all our projects that were due to start did not get canceled. They just got postponed. They started earlier this year, as lots of things happened last year, and we got a lot more demand. You know, COVID, supply chain resilience, Miro can discuss this a lot more than I can. He knows a lot more about this, but we started getting more demand. The fact that, you know, vaccine shipments everywhere, So we started getting more interest. And so we actually spent last year improving our technology, working on what we're providing, coming up with new functions and ideas. And so we're actually able to offer a better product now and that's more evolved.
Yeah, and maybe if you could describe to me the customer that would get the most benefit out of this. Like, who's the almost the low-hanging fruit, where it's a no-brainer that this industry or this type of company is a good match for this technology?
I'm not going to call it low-hanging fruit because they're the toughest clients to have. But the ones who are from our point of view, from our side, because you know the reason we joined the joint venture, we work together, is that from Miro's side, the technology they bring is fantastic. It's more for single use, tracking containers, pallets, and globally on all modals and at a cost efficient level. And he can tell you more about that afterwards. Where we really provide that the value is when we're getting down to the product. And so pharmaceuticals is really our main vertical. It's where we were cold chain, and pharma is what we started out developing this for, even though we plan to go across industries. So they're the ones who are going to get the most value. And that's why we created very small devices. So our real-time, what we call a beacon IoT, it's a real-time device that also has for those in pharma that also want vaccine shipments. So we have an external probe that can go down into dry ice, down to minus 100 degrees. But what we've made is we've made our main beacon IoT, which is small. Huh? It's smaller than a cell phone. It's a 50 millimeters large, 90 millimeters long, and 16 millimeters thick.
That's a pack of cigarettes.
It's basically a pack of cigarettes, maybe even smaller than a pack of cigarettes to give you an example. That gives you everything. That's real-time data. It has all the sensors I mentioned before. You have also the benefit of the internal. So if you have a vaccine probe, you'll have the internal temperature and you'll have the external ambient temperature. And you have all the information, real time, location, everything. And the added benefit of that is that you can also connect with lots of other smaller devices. So the child device, which we are called an active data logger, which is just a beacon. You can have lots of them in other boxes, and then they will connect with the beacon IoT, and all that information will come up to the platform. And everything is real time. So as soon as something happens, the information gets sent, and the client is informed of what it is, where it is, what's happening, and the level, the severity. So that is really the real time, or what I like to call immediate actionable information, something you can really work off of right away. And you can maybe save your shipment because, you know, you can get it and you can act upon it as quickly as possible. And that's where lots of savings will come from for the industry. But then they're not low hanging fruit because working with pharma is very complicated. Yeah. You have to be validated and qualified in every which way. So we are actually going through a full audit by a top auditing firm, so that we have that, and we hope to have that done within the next couple months. And and then that way everyone will be certain. I mean, we know that our solution is what's required. It meets all the regulation required. If you the FDA 21, CFR Part 11, your Eudralex Annex 11 in Europe, GAMP 5, etc. And we meet plus our devices are produced. At a manufacturer that is ISO 13485 compliant, which is for medical devices. So everything, traceability, we use very high precision digital sensors as well. So everything is really made to give the value to the pharma client. And once we're able to provide them with that service, we're already working with some very large pharma companies that are going to be rolling out with our solution. Other companies want to wait for the audit to be done. That's fine. That's their prerogative. But once we were able to do that, then we're going to really go across all the perishables industries.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a very complex setup there. And I didn't mean to, the low-hanging fruit as being easy for you, but something that's where it's a no-brainer for the industry, as in they should immediately embrace it because it can't be solved in any other way. But maybe just more specifically, take me through sort of the life cycle, how this whole thing works. So imagine a situation, let's stick with pharma, where it's a pharma company and they have outsourced manufacturing, let's say in India, for example, for a product. So you also have to then develop a relationship, of course, with the manufacturing facility. You have to have some sort of relationship with all the parties that are involved in between, right? So all the carriers, all the logistics providers and all of that, on top of the relationship with the pharma company, right? Does that describe the complexity accurately or no?
For us, the way we look at it is, I mean, our client will be either the manufacturer themselves or mm-hmm. if they're a sub-manufacturer, the company that owns the product above. That has the legal obligation, the legal responsibility to track and monitor their product. Then we will send our devices to whichever point of the packaging part, the packaging department at the manufacturing before it goes out into the logistics. And we've created a solution that's automated and seamless. So from the client side, they'll prepare their shipment on the platform. They'll scan a shipment code, they'll scan the beacon, and then once the shipment is ready, so the devices, what I call beacons, are on the shipment, they'll press the button to turn them on, and the beacon IoT will connect to the platform and say, hey, I'm activated, and the platform will say, okay, you are monitoring this shipment, these are the conditions that you need to monitor, and you're also connected to these other beacons that are on that shipment with you. And there you go, it starts. And you'll have done everything from the platform. So at the platform level, the client will have their product list in there. So every individual product could have different conditions it needs to be monitoring at different times, different intervals. And so all that information, when you set up the shipment, you're just scanning a shipment code, you're scanning your device, and you're choosing the product. That is if you're doing it manually from the platform. Otherwise, with all the API integrations, we can just have all the information come right into the platform. And so literally, they're just scanning the shipment label and scanning the device and then turning on the device. And then all that all those integrations of background are just bringing everything to work together. Then from there, everything goes automatically. So you'll start tracking. So from if you want to do the process as it leaves the factory. So from the factory, it's on a truck. We're tracking there, monitoring the conditions. Then at the warehouse, it's monitoring and telling you it's in the warehouse. Then it's going onto a plane. The device it goes onto a plane. The device goes the real time device goes into automatic airplane mode. So we have an algorithm that detects that we're going into a plane. We're going into taking off, and at that point it goes into airplane mode. But it continues to monitor everything. When it detects the landing, it then turns back on, sends all the data from during the flight, and continues to track and monitor the products until their final point of delivery. And even if at the final point of delivery is a distributor, the distributor could choose that he's taking off the real-time gateway, because maybe he has another one of our devices, a fixed comm box in their warehouse. And so the other beacons that were attached to that shipment, they're still monitoring and sending their information through the fixed comm box in the warehouse. And then he can cross dock and he can send all those boxes, all those shipments out to different places, and he can choose if he wants to use a real-time gateway to continue to monitor that somewhere else, or he might send it what we call a batch, and he might send it as batch to another client, and then they'll just use the mobile application and they'll upload the data when they received the shipment.
Yeah, and talk to me. You've mentioned a couple of times the platform. Let's dive into that. Let's talk about the platform. What sort of platform are we talking about? It's a cloud-based platform. Yes. That automatically receives all the data feeds from all the devices all over the world, and then me as the manufacturer, your client, your customer, has access to this data and has a dashboard and can do a variety of things. Talk to me about this platform, what it looks like and what the capabilities of that are.
Yeah, so from our point of view, we built the dashboard to be as user-friendly, of course, but also to be you don't need to look for things. So from our point of view, what do you need if you're managing the logistics? You need to know where you have issues. So when you come onto the dashboard, we provide you with the exceptions, the alarms, the events that are going on, where those alarms are. So you'll have the list, you'll have the most recent one at the top of the list. You'll see where that alarm is coming from, what shipment that's in. Is it the whole shipment? Is it just one box? Is it just one pallet within that shipment? You can see that right away. You'll see what that shipment is going from where to where. The time of the alarm, of course. You'll see the product that's involved in that, and then you'll see the graphical chart. If it is a temperature excursion, for example, or if it's an event, then you'll be notified that it was a shock and how hard the shock was. Of course, you can go down into the details. You can then see the whole journey route. You can see all the charts of all the data that's been received up until that point. You can see all the individual data points if you want. And then the platform is, I mean, it's there to be used, of course, but it's really to receive the data, analyze the data, and then provide that data to the clients. And also at the end of a shipment or a journey, as we call it, then you'll get your end of journey report. So is everything okay? Yes. Okay, great. I can release it. It wasn't okay. Okay, what happened? Where? Why? So it's that most valuable information. We're developing all the analytics, so we're as well. So we're going to look to also be able to inform you when an event has happened, how to avoid that in the future, what are the best routes to use. When we've built up the data with a client for enough time, we can say, listen, use route A instead of route B or C between those legs, because it's better, you have less problems with that. Use this carrier rather than another carrier from as well, because you just seem to have a better service with them, you have less problems with them. And so we're really building up to include all of that. And we're also looking to partner up with other large platforms that already have that involved. So we might stick just to providing the best, most accurate data, and let the others who have already developed that bit work on that. So we're open to everything.
Yeah. Is there already a way to integrate the data that's coming out of the platform with other existing systems? So I'm thinking like an ERP, for example, or transportation management system, or any other system that your manufacturer is using? Or is it a standalone platform that I have to log on separately and sort of do the data transfer manually? Or what's the way the system interacts with other systems?
Yeah, we have a full API. To be able to interact with integrate and interact with any system.
Okay, and what does that allow you to do? Give me a good example of how API based integration with another system would look like.
Coming back to the pharma example, as I was mentioning, so for example, we could upload all the information on the product list from that client onto their profile. So they wouldn't need to double input any information. We could log into their ERP or their WMS or the TMS so that once they've completed they know what their shipment contains on their side. When they scan the shipping code on our side, they don't need to fill that back in. That information is just being pulled into our system to then connect to provide that information to the devices. We can also send the data, the route, all the data collected from the devices through our API to their systems as well. So maybe they're not interested in collecting all the data, but they're interested in specific points of data. Alarms as well, we can send that through to their platform rather than emailing or sending messages to specific individuals. We also can integrate metadata, so flight tracking, maritime tracking, all that, and we can send that to them if they're not already using that. It's really fully compatible and fully integrated. There's full possibility of integrating with the client in whichever way. Whatever data we have, we can provide to them.
Yeah, and what is your way to integrate? I mean, do you have an integration team, or do you rely on external consultants to get the integrations done? Do they do that internally? What's the typical route of getting those integrations done?
Well, nowadays, you know, I know that the speed of digital transformation is slower than most people say for most companies, but it is improving. Lots of companies are going through a digitalization, and we're seeing it, you know, especially in supply chains and logistics. So where companies a few years ago, even just last year, were still needing full teams to integrate, and, you know, even saying, oh, I want your platform, I want the servers on my in my office and all that. Now everyone is getting used to working with cloud systems, and the digitalization aspect really means that as long as you have a very solid and complete API from your platform, you don't need a full team of people to do an integration. You provide them with the API, and then their IT team can decide what their commands that they're going to send through your APIs to be able to collect the data that they need. And we will do the same from our side with their APIs for data that needs to be pulled into our system.
But Boris, you're now talking about the IT integration, which is the coding part, right? But we have the team of the customer service support, which does the, what do you call, custom onboarding, right? Because that's more important than the data itself. Because if we would be replacing one-to-one a legacy system, then it's slightly easy because the data used to be there, and now they are more convenient, more accurate, and more in real time. But if you have a customer who never used that, maybe they are not ready to work with the real-time data. So that's the integration team from that perspective to actually guide the customer on what you can do, what you can achieve, where are the boundaries, where are the benefits of having those data, and where you should have the level of details flooded to each of everyone mailbox, because that's usually the first biggest mistake. So let's send us an email with alarm. And then after 2 weeks, you have a full mailbox, and then you decide not to look at it again.
Yeah.
And then the integration stops, right? So we have that customer support who guides the customer, saying, no, those are the critical data. This is the severity one. This is severity two. Helping them to get the value from the data.
Yeah. How fast do you expect the sort of onboarding to go from when a customer first decides to launch with you guys until the system's up and running? What sort of time frame are we talking? Are we talking month? Are we talking years? Hopefully not years.
Yeah, no, we are much faster than the customer usually is. So we would do that in a month. But if we take the full cycle with the POC, contracting, manufacturing, Then from the engagement, we're looking at a 2-3 months as optimal.
Yeah, and Miro, as you so we talked about pharma, and that's an obvious case. I mean, it has a lot of need regards to tracking temperature and shocks and whatnot across the supply chain. But there are other industries where the need for real-time information along all of these different dimensions isn't all that necessary. So what's maybe the next level down? What's the next industry that could really benefit it from a sort of scaled-down version of something, well, that farmer needs, has very, very special needs, but then other industries have other needs? Talk to me about the next level down. Which is the next industry that should be opening up for you guys with this technology?
Well, I've been always looking at that as a pyramid. So the small number of shipments of the highest value sits on the top. They could afford an expensive tracking device to protect the goods, right? Yeah. We have been there with Bacardi and saying, no, the tracking is too expensive. We rather settle for less and take the risk or take other measures, right? So with the cost drawing down, we are opening a space for the middle part of the pyramid. So for all the manufacturers of fast consumer goods, consumer electronics, not necessarily the top expensive one, where you start benefiting, and the ROI, it's about the cost of the logistics around, not necessarily the product itself. It's so cost effective for you to put a tracker on a container, pallet, truck, that you actually don't think twice to do that.
I think one of the really important points about the benefit of, you say, you know, going down to the layers, the lower layers, and it's expensive, and you know, maybe sometimes they say, oh well, the value of my pallet is not that much, do I want to put on a tracking device on that or a monitoring device? And it depends. And and you know, as I said, our vision is to be able to really provide that information to everyone while keeping the costs very low, and we do that, and I think we've planned that and done that very well. And the benefit they get, the main benefit, and we saw this, you know, with really the largest fast moving consumer goods companies, in drinks and in candies and everything else. We've been talking with these companies, and in other countries, specifically, this is was in India, and their interest is the fact that their shipments, they're sending out thousands of trucks across the country on a daily basis, and or hundreds of trucks on a daily basis, thousands per month, and they're delivering all these pallets. And the problem is that they're counting on the client confirming that they've received the goods and then getting paid. Whereas once you start providing the tracking, then you don't need to wait on the client to confirm to you to get paid. You can send out the invoice right away, say, we've dropped off the goods, we know that we have. You can't combat it. You can't say no. So your billing is faster, your accounts receivable diminishes, because you can get money coming back faster. So everyone can benefit from this. Whether it's fast moving consumer goods, whether it's luxury goods, it's high valued goods, whether it's perishables, because you know you want to make sure that the shelf life of your goods on in the grocery store are good for as long as possible, whether it's pharma, life saving conditions, vaccines, whatever. I don't believe that there's any industry out there that really won't benefit from this kind of visibility and monitoring.
Yeah, and especially we would probably expect for the next few years for the technology to get better and cheaper and more widely available. I mean, talk to me about the future. What do you see unfold in the next few years that will really benefit this technology that makes it better and cheaper and all of that?
Well, the next few years is going to be very complicated because we have electronics shortages and component shortages, because you have a never seen before situation where you have the explosion of EV vehicles, you have an explosion of IoT, you've had a semiconductor plant blow up in go on fire in Japan and everything, and there's just demand everywhere, and then you've had supply chain issues, you've had the Suez Canal closure, etc. And so all of this together has just created, and then you had the other thing is that with COVID, everyone working from home and remotely, you've had a massive explosion in consumer goods purchases and electronics purchases, right? Because everyone's working from home and everything. So it's just created a situation which, you know, people, depending who you talk to, they'll say end of this year, end of next year. You start to go down the to the beginning, though, if you go up the layers to the almost to the raw materials level, they're going to tell you that this is a 2024 situation. So that is going to be a downside. So the price won't be really able to, I think, decrease until after that. However, where the future really lies, and where I won't say exactly what we're planning to do, obviously, but it is really to be able to get onto every item. It's going to be looking at being very conscious about energy consumption. It's using 5G in all of its benefits. It's reducing that cost as much as possible. And it's taking advantage of all of these autonomous vehicle situations that are coming on. So if I like to create a little story board when I describe this. And if you can imagine that somebody is ordering a package, right? So that everyone does nowadays, right? They're on Amazon, they're on their phone, they're at home, they see something, they order it, right? So that then goes off to the other side of the world where the manufacturer then gets that order and that shipment goes on to, gets going. From that point forward, you should be able to start to track it at least, potentially monitor it if it needs to. Now, it might not be that that manufacturer has the devices or the technology to be able to do that, but at least some kind of checkpoint into that you have today with Amazon. So you have all those checkpoints that are going to go on, or any company, into until you get to, say, the main hub of that client. And then in the city or the metropole where that the customer was. Now, when it comes to that main hub, be it a port, so maybe you've tracked and monitored it on the boat when it arrived to the port, but at least there, imagine you have an autonomous truck that's going and taking the container off the boat. And so you know that that package was in that container, so you know, you now know it's on that autonomous vehicle, and then it brings it to the warehouse. At the warehouse, they open up the container. Then you have a lot of autonomous robots that are coming in to collect the packages. So you know that the package is now with that robot and where it's been placed in the warehouse. If it needs to be immediately shipped, or if it's, you know, to be sit there for a few days before it's shipped, you can, you know, your robots are bringing it to different places. And then from there, you just have continuous connectivity of information coming in. That is telling you exactly where your package is going along, and it's going to the local fulfillment center. And then at the local fulfillment center, they're deciding whether it's an autonomous ground vehicle or autonomous robot that are coming out nowadays that are bringing the deliveries, or even a drone if it's a suburban home that is being delivered to. And at that point, the client is being told that your package is being delivered, or even before that, but they know exactly when their package is being delivered, and they can be there to be ready, or they can postpone it. And it's all of that happening in a seamless and autonomous way. That is for me the future of where we go with supply chain logistics.
Yeah. And Miro, what do you think? How far are we away from having that vision for every bottle of Bacardi in the world?
To have that every Bacardi. That's actually a good question. I don't want that. I don't want to be tracked when I'm drinking my Bacardi. But right. You really spot on that this is the solutions which in the past we have been hoping that the RFID would deliver that, right? Yes. That didn't happen. So now we are looking at the same results but using a 5G. So once the 5G, it's in every corner of the city or highway. We have the ideal connectivity, then the devices will be seamlessly connected and they will go to the price of penny.
Yeah, and we're still very, very far away from that. If we look at the situation
well,
here
far
in Germany,
we can do with the 5G, 5G. Right? That's right. That's the speed of the 5G will determine when we're going to be in a vision of Charles. But obviously, you're going to have hubs where it will be possible. But those will be the city metropole islands, and there you are going to be benefit to creating the green logistics, right? Because you're not going to have only visibility, but you're going to have the predictability, and you're going to design based on the data the solution to be most efficient and least polluting supply chain.
And I think 5G is actually exploding a lot faster than people really realize, and we're really going to see that explosion, especially in the more developed emerging markets, where they'll just jump to 5G because it's easier than and faster to deploy rather than building out all the older infrastructure.
Yeah, they're just leapfrogging ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah. We are not actually going to be there until everyone is on the 5G. So those developed markets like Switzerland won't benefit from 5G until everyone else is.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. That was a very, very good deep dive into everything traceability in the supply chain. Very good conversation. I'm curious to see how your company or how your technology will unfold. I keep a close eye on you guys, and next time around I want you to be fully up and running and on every box, at least on the pharma side, and maybe expand into many more industries.
So do we.
Yeah, but next time we do something like that, we do it here in Switzerland with a glass of whiskey or Bacardi.
Fantastic. That's a done deal. Guys, thank you very much for the conversation, and until next time.
Boris, thank you.
Thank you very much, Boris.
All right. That was the Logistics Drive podcast episode about IoT-enabled real-time visibility and traceability in the supply chain. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If so, please consider supporting us by giving us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And please follow or subscribe to the Logistics Drive podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. I promise there's lots of good stuff coming that you don't want to miss. I'm Boris Felgentreher. Until next time.